I'm chatting today with David Russell, who is from Aviemore, which is one of the areas actually that I used to live in. So that's really nice. And it's also the area that we won the festival in, we will be running the festival in October. So it's quite interesting to talk to you. So David, thank you for coming along. Would you like to just tell us a little overview of what you do in your photography at the moment?
Sure. Yep. Thanks. No, it's my pleasure, firstly, to be joining you today. Oh, it's always kind of a tricky question as to what I do. You know, I try to do, you know, to keep a lot of variety in life, really. So, you know, I try not ever to get stuck too much on one thing. But fundamentally, I am an outdoor lover. I'm a photographer. I work mainly as a guide in the outdoors. So I take people and I show them around Scotland on the holidays and teach photography and other outdoor skills. So I guess you could say I'm sort of very outdoor focused in life. And, you know, I just really enjoy being out in the beautiful landscapes that we have here in the Highlands.
Oh, fantastic. And it's Aviemore that you live in, is it?
I do, yes. Aviemore for the time being, yeah.
I came to Aviemore in 2001. Mm-hmm. Lived in Aviemore only for about a year when my son was born. I lived in Linwilg just outside.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you know it. It's not even a place, is it? It's just it's a little street that goes in. Yeah. Well, it's not even a street. It's a path that goes towards the forest.
Yeah.
It was a funny time for me. Because I was pregnant with my first child, and we ended up living in this tiny, this random sort of shack in near the woods. Mm-hmm. It wasn't great, but what I did love about Aviemore was the walks. Oh my mm-hmm. goodness, the walks, the volume of places that you can access, and the beauty around Aviemore. It's just phenomenal. I've not found anywhere like that since, I don't think.
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. I think it's just the sheer variety of locations that we have is really quite remarkable, because we have some of the most extensive Caledonian forest left in Scotland, sort of surrounding the town. So, you know, I mean, how many different places are there in a wood? It's like quite a few. And then of course, just a stone's throw from that, we've got the Cairngorms themselves, the mountains. So, you know, it's the largest area of the mountainous terrain anywhere in the country. And yeah, it's all within easy, you know, 10-minute striking distance, really. So it does feel remarkably wild here, despite the fact it also feels remarkably well connected to civilization. So yeah, it's kind of a best of both worlds, I suppose.
Yeah. I used to go to Loch Morley pretty much every day. I love Loch Morley because it's so accessible.
Yeah,
and you can just go along, and there's a beach. There's a kind of a beach. I always wondered what that beach was, because can't be a beach. Do you know?
I kind of know. Yeah, I was guiding some people up on the mountain the other day, and they looked down at that view over Glenmore and Loch Morley, and they're like, "Is that a beach? But it's not a real beach, right? No, but it must bring it in. It must import the sand from somewhere. Like, no, that's a real beach. So, yeah, it's a very special.
It's
place.
Random.
Yeah.
It's such a random place. But I used to go and just take the dog and the baby at the time onto that beach, and it felt like being on a beach, which was really strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then later on, we spent a lot of time. Well, not a lot. Time as much time as we can paddling on Loch Morley. Mm-hmm, so you know, anything from I think we tried a little bit of windsurfing, failed at that. This wasn't very good at that. It's quite hard,
tricky.
Isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's quite tricky.
And then paddleboarding, and I quite recently I went out there and I just hired it was a paddleboard I hired, and it was one of those beautifully like glassy days where there's no wind. I just had the best time ever. So it's just it is a great place. I do miss it for those outdoor locations. And the other place was Rothie Mercus, Loch Annealyn.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic, isn't it? So your your own photography. What's your focus? Or do you enjoy both? Do you enjoy up the hill and down the hill? So I don't climb. I've never climbed mountains.
I do enjoy both. I enjoy everything, but it's kind of like whatever's right in front of me. I want to kind of explore that as deeply as possible. So, you know, like Rothie Mercus that you just mentioned, for instance, I think probably I've shot like 90% of my portfolio, you know,
really?
in the woods around Rothie Mercus, because I found Rothie Mercus very creatively appealing immediately. Yeah. In fact, it was well, years ago now, probably 15 years ago, when I was working as an outdoor instructor and I was supervising a Duke of Edinburgh expedition on mountain bikes. And I had this evening where I was riding through the sort of the hinterlands of Rothiemurchus, you know, away from, yeah. from all the busy public spots. And I just found myself absolutely captivated by these, you know, ancient woodlands and you know, the way that the light was breaking through the branches and these avenues of trees that were seemingly just going on forever and ever and ever. And it was very much like where I grew up in the west of Scotland, in Helensburgh. You know, it was, I suppose it's not objectively that similar in terms of climate and so on. But, you know, I spent a lot of my childhood just wandering around in the woods near home. And it was, you know, it just brought all that back. And I felt like that's a place I need to get into. So I spent a long, long time sort of exploring, you know, the unknown parts of a wood, I suppose, is how I would think of it. It's probably a bit naughty. I mean, you know, you're probably supposed to stay on the trail and, you know, leave no trace and everything. But I just couldn't resist just walking directly into the forest, you know, away from where the path was going. So that's a place that's very, very dear to me. So
That's really interesting. It's when I was putting the this year's festival together, we were deciding on the locations for we're doing it like a location trip every morning. So we'll take a group of people out to a location. They're just free to go and photograph it themselves. And I chose Loch Neilin. So we're going to be doing that because for me, that sort of has everything. Loch Morley is lovely, but it's a little bit more... it is a little bit more commercialized, a little bit more there,
isn't it? It's busier, and it's certainly got busier, I think, since the time when you were living here. So,
there's been
a lot of changes recently, but Loch Neilin still certainly has that magic about it. Although, interestingly, I think if you ever come across photos of that area from like 100 years ago, it's actually really amazing how much wilder Rothiemurchus is today, you know, or at least in my opinion. I've seen, you know, photos from Loch Neilin from about 1920, and there's so few trees. Like, whoa, this is really amazing. You know, it's become a lot more heavily forested, and the woodlands have been thinned out, and you know, so it's starting to look a lot more natural. And with the rewilding efforts that are going on in the area as well through Cairngorms Connect, it's really transformed even in the last 10 years or so that I've been living here. You know, there's lots of compositions in the woods I can no longer shoot because little trees that were just saplings when I first knew it are now, you know, 10 feet taller than I am. So they're kind of blocking the view. But it's amazing to see it change like that. But yeah, I think it's very special living in a part of the world that does actually feel like nature's getting better and healthier, and there are species returning to the area like the osprey. And it was on the news the other day that the Kappa Kali numbers are actually increasing again for the first time in a while. So there's lots of reasons to be hopeful, I think, when you live around Aviemore. It's kind of a nice feeling.
Yeah, is it a difficult place for people to actually to buy and to live, if you see what I mean, because there's a lot of places now that are struggling with.
Yeah,
I thought that.
We were really lucky in that we found somewhere that was, you know, relatively affordable when we moved here. But one does feel, you know, a certain degree of privilege and of good fortune to be able to enjoy it. But you know, even if you can't live here, it's fairly well connected, so you know, it's quite easily reached from Inverness or Edinburgh on the train and the bus and so on. So, you know, I hope that it is somewhere that people do feel that like it's theirs to enjoy and explore, even if they don't actually live here as well. So I think that's important.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. It is actually a lot easier to get to than some of the places, like somewhere like Harris, for instance. It's, you know, it takes me a lot longer to get out to me than to get to Aviemore. You can just fly to Inverness. Mm-hmm. And actually, Joe Cornish is coming up in October, and he said to me, actually, Rothiemurchus is one of the places that I want to do some of my own work. So it was okay if I just stay for the 4 days. And I was like, yeah, of course. So he's going to be accompanying people on the trips just because he wants to be in that location. So it's really nice. Obviously, I chose the right place. I'm really looking forward to it, because when I was there, I wasn't a photographer, actually. You know, it wasn't something that I was actively doing in my life. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time walking and exploring, but I wasn't photographing at all. So actually, I don't have that many photos of the area at all. It's not something that I've ever pursued. So it'd be really nice to spend a bit of time. And we'll be there a few days before, so maybe you can pop along and
if I'm here, I'd be delighted to be around. That'd be wonderful.
That'd be great. So how long have you lived in this area? You said you're from
I'm from Helensburgh originally. I grew up in Helensburgh, and then I went to university at St Andrews, and while I was there, I made the happy decision of joining the mountaineering club. So and also the canoe club, actually, because it was great, because if it was raining, then you'd go canoeing and kayaking and on the river, and if it was dry, then you'd go up the mountain. So it worked brilliant. Perfectly for 4 years, and in that time we got to explore a lot of Scotland, which is something I think that often people are not very good at exploring their own country. Tend to get distracted by cheap flights to Spain quite often.
Yeah, absolutely. You've just sort of hit the nail on the head there for me. In fact, I was having a conversation yesterday, I'll run this by you, with somebody, and we're trying to decide on some new locations for retreats, so for creative retreats and also for the festival. And so we were going through things yesterday in this meeting, and I was saying, well, do you know what? We've got the opportunity to go to Portugal, which is a great puts a contact out there. And I was thinking it might be really nice because the weather's nice. And I'm not dismissing it, so in case anybody's listening, we're not dismissing Portugal or abroad. But I was saying, my heart is saying, it's always said Scotland, it hasn't always said, I got a little bit, as you said, distracted. And it's sometimes people, I think, get the focus goes on to, well, if you're going abroad, it's very glamorous, isn't it? And that's the sort of the ultimate. I'm traveling a lot. I'm going to, unless that's your thing, I think, some people have a thing where their photography is all about different cultures or something,
Yeah.
But if they're not, I think you can easily get like a kind of feeling that, going to Japan or China, or I'm trying to think of some exotic sounding places, to photograph is the ultimate. But actually, for me, it's always been Scotland. Scotland's been, and also the UK coast, some of the coastline in the UK is just phenomenal.
Oh, it's incredible.
Isn't it? So, and then we're adding in the complexity of having to fly. I'm really not enjoying flying now after COVID. I don't know, it's just changed everything for me. I did a few years of travel photography in 2010 to 2015. And then I suddenly realized, actually, this doesn't mean anything to me. There's no meaning behind these places in like Greece. What are my connections with Greece? There's none. That's lovely. It's warm. It's great. But I don't have a connection. And I do have this very strong connection with Scotland and the islands in particular for me. So why then would I go to Greece and run a retreat? And I don't know, I'm querying that still, so it's going on in my head, so maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Well, it's interesting. I think you've really hit the nail on the head as to how I feel about Scotland and about photography and connection to places, because sometimes when people travel to Scotland, I'm guiding for them. If it's a photography trip, maybe they'll send me a link to their portfolio. And often it's Americans, and you have a look through their website, and you see a kind of a hit list. Oh, sorry, that was my dog just sneezing. Anyway, you see like a hit list of the world's most famous locations, and it's just about every iconic, but you might also say cliched shot from around the world. It's like okay, you've done Mesa Arch. You've done Kirkjufell in Iceland. You've been to this place in Norway and that place in Portugal, wherever it is. And it's very, very broad, but it's also quite shallow. And I don't want to necessarily criticize it, because for some people, yeah, it's about the travel, and it's about like, oh, I want to go as many places as possible and fill up my life with adventure. And I absolutely respect that, but it's just not how I respond. You know, I think I'm much more like you in that I want like deep knowledge of a place that I know, rather than a kind of superficial understanding of lots of different places that I'm never going to go back to. So that's sort of the driving emotion, I think, behind why I take photos. And you know, earlier you were saying that when you lived in the area, you weren't really a photographer at that point. And I've been musing recently on what actually is that makes someone a photographer. You know, I think the camera itself is almost kind of irrelevant, I think. You know, it's a mindset, and well, I don't know that heart set is a word, but it's really a it's kind of a, you know, a sense of an inner connection to a place, I think, that, you know, maybe a sort of a deep curiosity and passion for knowing it better that really drives it. So I think whether you have a camera or not is really besides the point. It's about seeking something special in the landscape around you that matters.
Yeah, and I suppose if you don't have a camera, and maybe the years I spent just absorbing or just being in the landscape was actually probably like a foundation, kind of like a way of connecting
deeply. I think it's crucial. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have a camera until I was about 20, but I can certainly attribute a lot of what I do now is down to sort of early experiences, you know, and just having the good fortune to grow up in a place and time where people were not paranoid about letting their kids play outdoors all day and just like sort of release you into the woods and be like, you know, be back by midnight, ideally. You're like, okay, I'll try.
I know. And actually, when you said that, I was like, oh, got it. I get it now. I can understand who you are now. I'm always trying to understand people a little bit more. But usually it comes from that, as you're obviously well aware, that early childhood connection to, and that doesn't mean going out with a camera, because when you're six or seven or eight, or I don't know if you're allowed out at that age, I'm not really sure. But I think you were back then. So, you know, you're not going out to create something necessarily. You might do it just as a byproduct, but you're going out to just enjoy and to be in those woods. And I can imagine you just going off. And I was in Manchester, a city centre, when growing up, so I was allowed out into the alleyways to play with bikes. Wasn't quite the same, but you know, I do think those early childhood experiences dictate who we become and what we love later in life and what we feel connected to. So you've clearly got that just ingrained in you. It's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, and it's funny looking back, because you know, there's many days where I don't remember that I was going to the woods that day. Like, I remember that I was going out to fight dragons with my with my pal, but I was going out to go mountaineering on the, you know, the grassy slope behind the house or something. And it's strange how expansive some of those very, very small places are in my memory. You know, and I remember particular small details in the landscape as much grander and more significant than they probably are in truth. Although, you know, I think you could argue about which one's real, but yes, you know, it's as you say, those early connections, they really matter. And I think what's at the heart of a lot of creative people once they grow up into adults is that they it's just the relationship of a landscape that changes a little bit. You know, it turns slightly from being a playground in sort of the true sense of play, you know, just constantly stimulating the imagination, to a playground of a different type, where I suppose from my perspective, I'm constantly seeking sort of nuance and, you know, new things that I haven't seen before in the place. You know, I did a presentation a little while ago, and I was, you know, about my photography, and I was putting a lot of thought into what it is that I'm actually looking for. And it's, you know, So there's this tree. Okay, I need to tell you the story properly. There's this tree on Rothiemurchus. It's birch tree. And I've been photographing that tree for about 10 years now, probably since since I moved here. And over time, you eventually, well, I've photographed it so many times that you see the same moment repeat itself. And I came home one night and I looked at my photos and I thought, oh, that's quite nice. And then I opened up a different folder in Lightroom. And lo and behold, there was the exact same photo. And I thought I'd actually misfiled it for a moment and was like, no, this is 4 years ago. It's identical in every respect, other than the snow line is in a slightly different place. You know, it's like the same lighting on this tree, the same season, the leaves are the same shade. Everything is just identical, apart from that one tiny detail. So it got me thinking, well, what does a genuinely unique moment look like, you know, that won't be repeated for maybe 10 years or maybe 100 years? You know, what does that like real once in a lifetime moment look like, and can I find it? Can I be there? So that's kind of the game for me, really, is to try and know a place so deeply that I can tell straight away, like, this is a special moment, or nah, this is beautiful, but this is its everyday beauty.
I get that.
And when you bring someone to that place for the first time, like if they've never been there before, you know, and you'll see them like grabbing their cameras and be like, wow, this is amazing. And you know, sometimes that first initial burst of creativity is what you need to get through before you actually start accessing the good stuff that lies beyond, once you've kind of taken all the obvious shots and seen it in all the sort of more common shades of beauty that place has.
Totally understand what you're saying there. And I think actually you're very similar to the way that I respond to the landscape, in that I enjoy that deeper connection. And I think that we need to be shooting for like 10 years before we start to get somewhere with one place. Everybody's going to be shocked listening to this now, go, oh my goodness, I've got 10 years to go. But it's fact. And when I came to Drumnadrochit, I came to live in Drumnadrochit, I can't remember how long ago it was, but it's not naturally my landscape. It's not kind of a natural thing. I would like, well, but it was a situation I had at the time. So I thought, right, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to start photographing Loch Ness. Like, I did it every day for a year. Mm-hmm. And then I just carried on doing it, not every day, but I thought, right, I'll do a 6 or 7 year project on it, even though it wasn't, you know, completely natural to me. And it was really, really interesting. And then I produced a book at the end of it. Loch Ness isn't one of the most sought after locations or the easiest locations to connect to, so that it needed that real deep time, because you'd get one amazing morning where the conditions were so fabulous, and there was actually, I'm sitting here with my book next to me, so I'm looking at the cover and it's Orchid Castle, and there's steam coming off the loch, and there's mist, and it's sort of blue, and it's winter. That doesn't happen. That happens like once every 3 years, that morning. So it needed that time. And I suppose by the end of it, I was kind of like, I sort of understand this place much better. But it isn't the place I connect to. The place I connect to are Beaches and Hebrides. So that's been a lot longer. I've been photographing that for a lot longer time, but with less intensity.
Yeah.
So I suppose I wonder if you find firstly, you find your passion, you find your thing. And that's, as we said earlier, that's a lot to do with the childhood connections. Mm-hmm. But you have to be self-aware enough to know what that thing is and that place is. And then you're persistent and dedicated enough to keep doing that without being, oh, this is it, this is where my mind's going, without being distracted by the shiny things that probably seem immediately likable to other people. So, you know, so you might be doing this thing and it's actually fairly, maybe not as eye-catching when we're talking about other people liking it and looking at it. And, but you just kind of plod on and you do your thing and you love doing it and you get really deep with it. And this is where the powerful work comes in, isn't it? This is where the great work comes in.
That's it.
It's not valuing others' opinions. That's where it is.
I think you're absolutely right. When you find that thing, that, you know, whatever it is that you feel connected to. You know, for me, it was Scots pine trees, you know. It's just like, yeah. Oh, wow, that's really great. An iconically beautiful thing. You know, yeah. And but it's crucial. I mean, if you're setting out on this road where you want to create some sort of meaningful work, then you can't do it without listening to what's in your heart at that point and mm-hmm. you know, ignore the opinions of others, perceived or received, because you know that thing you said a minute ago, like that 10-year journey where it's like, you know, you need to do that before you can even start to see. And it does sound daunting mm-hmm. when you say it like that, but you know what, honestly, like, it is its own reward. Actually, it is, that process is an absolute joy.
Yeah.
And every step you go further down that road, you're kind of like, wow, how much further does this go? You know, and whenever I'm out in the Cairngorms and I see something new, I mean, sometimes I'm just absolutely shocked at the seemingly infinite ways that the mountains and the woods have to reinvent their own beauty, you know, and it's constantly familiar and yet constantly new, you know. And it was a thing a few years ago. It was strange. So usually, you know, autumn is one of the best times to be here in the Cairngorms because we get these, you know, fabulous autumn colours, and we usually get temperature inversions in the mornings in October. And then there was one year where it just didn't happen at all. You know, and it's starting to feel like, oh, that's a bit of a shame. You know, it's just been too warm and too wet and so on. And so we didn't get any of those conditions until much later in the year. And then suddenly, just before Christmas, to my great surprise, we had a temperature inversion that lasted about a week. You know, it never stopped. And it was right throughout Scotland, and every single day it was, you know, opening Instagram and people were posting photos of, like, I've been up this mountain and that mountain. And it was astonishing, you know, everybody was out having a great time. But I went out into the woods, and, you know, it's like, you just have to imagine, like, well, what's your absolute dream morning? Okay, now you can have it seven times in a row, you know, and it was just staggering. You know, there was this hoarfrost that was coating everything, and there was a low-lying mist. So, you know, it was like every single facet of every tree was catching the light like a chandelier, and there were all these amazing shafts of light coming through the woods and so on. And eventually, I just ran out of things to think about. You know, I couldn't. I'd be sitting at home in the morning and thinking, I don't know where to go tomorrow, because in the last few days, I've already, you know, I've done everything I could possibly imagine, and the, you know, the landscape, the beauty of the landscape has now actually exceeded my imagination by a considerable margin. So, but you know, if I hadn't spent 10 years waiting for that, I probably wouldn't have recognized it for what it was. I'd have gone out and be like, oh, I had a nice morning. Oh, I'll go out next week again. Who knows? But yeah.
It's exhausting, it's always, isn't it? When you get those, like, one after the other, after the other, so you're like, oh, I've got to keep going, because it's just so incredible. And actually, when you mentioned that October thing, I've always, obviously, October is the best time in the Highlands of Scotland. You've got to be here in that October. And it used to fall on the kids' holidays, used to be when they were at school, used to be that sort of period, didn't it? And we'd often go away because that's what you do. You go away for the October holidays. It's a Scottish tradition, isn't it? And we'd go wherever. We'd go to Lewis remember we went to Holland once, and as we drove back from the airport, and the beauty the autumn colours had just come out, and I was going, oh, why did I go to Holland? I should have been in the house. And every time, every October, I'm like, it's the place to be. Don't be anywhere else.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah, my wife works in a school, and she likes to go to the south of France in October. So every year she's like, oh, do you want to come to France with us this year? No. Why would I want to go anywhere else?
it is the place to be, I've got to say. It's just amazing. I'm looking forward to this October. I'm going back to the Highlands in the middle. I think it's about the 20th, and then we're staying for a couple of weeks. So, because in Harris, there's no trees, there's no autumn, and it's such a stark contrast. You know, I love it out there, but then when you come back in that sort of time, you know, that time period, it's just like, oh, wow. you know, there's no autumn. It doesn't feel like there's an autumn there when you come here, and it's just orange. Everything's orange. So I'll be back every October, definitely, for now.
Well, it's funny because I actually, well, since last year, I've resolved to try and make time to go to Harris every October because I had such a good time there last year. You know, I adore Harris, and I was really lucky last year because I got to spend a lot of my guiding season in the Hebrides, although it was lovely. Just about the wettest summer I can remember. But I had a wonderful, wonderful trip out there in October, and I came like within inches of getting one of the best shots of my life, and I didn't quite get it, you know. And it was out at Hooshnish where we were staying at the community owned camper van bit just there. I went out one night thinking, oh, I'll wander down to the beach and take some photos of sunset, and then I just left the car park and I heard this stag roaring up on the hill and I thought, ooh, that sounds pretty close. So I started heading uphill hoping that I could just pop over the horizon and get a shot of it before he, you know, ran away. And I got awfully close to this glorious, enormous stag, but the meanwhile behind me was the most staggering sunset I'd seen all year. And so, but the sunset was on one side and the stag was on the other, and it was just like, oh, if I could just find a way around to get a silhouette in this shot
to move them,
but it didn't quite happen. But you know, it was one of those moments that just kind of, you know, lit the fires of imagination when you realize, like, oh, this I could find this again. Like this doesn't have to be a one-off moment. If I come back and keep pursuing this, and that's a shot I'll get. So yeah, I think it's just such a wonderful place, Harris. Yeah, even living in Aviemore, I certainly envy you being able to, you know, to work on that kind of deep knowledge in that place. It's something I'd love to do.
Yeah, is that your dog barking?
Yeah. Fortunately, he's not been too noisy
It's been pretty good. I was looking through your website earlier, and I saw that are you an instructor for kayaking and canoeing, or do you just?
Yeah, I haven't done that for a while, but yes, I was a level 2 paddle sports coach before my career veered more from instructing towards guiding. So yeah, I used to like teach, you know, canoeing and kayaking, rock climbing and things like that, but discovered a while ago that what I really love is guiding and just helping people to forge that emotional connection to places.
It's a completely different thing. I can see that on different levels, but the reason I was asking you was that I just bought a fishing kayak, and the reason I bought a fishing kayak, I was going through all the different options. I've got this ridiculous whippet dog who doesn't like water, but I'm determined to get her on the water with me. Now I paddleboard a lot, and I'm like, she's not getting on a paddleboard. There's no way she'd get her feet wet. She doesn't like getting her feet wet. So I thought, well, what could I get her in? So, you know, we can enjoy being out together. You know, what's the best possibility? And I thought canoe, and so I went and explored that, and I thought, oh no, I'm not going to manage a canoe. Well, I probably could, but I had a long story, but I couldn't actually buy one and get it out to the Hebrides. It was pretty tricky.
Right.
So I ordered a fishing, it's a double fishing kayak, nice, because it seemed to be the most stable thing, and it's got two seats, so I reckon I can put in it. I don't know if I'll keep everybody updated on that, because that could be quite amusing, actually.
It can be very amusing. It can be very scary as well. Like, yeah, I canoe. I love canoeing, and yeah, I mean, again, well, touching on both sides, you know, water sports and deep connection and creativity. Yeah. Loch Maree is like, well, is the other place that I absolutely adore. You know, I could, you know, I find myself yearning for Loch Maree at times, and just wanting to nip up there, you know, and just spend a few nights just to watch the scenery and so on. But yeah, if you're a canoeist, then Loch Maree is one of the most incredibly rewarding places, because it's got these, you know, amazing islands which are covered in pine forest. So it's an astonishingly beautiful part of Scotland to explore. But Loch Maree is a scary old loch. Even to someone who's, you know, done a fair bit of sea kayaking and white water and so on, you know, the waves on Loch Maree can get up to a couple of meters in height, And you can be a very, very long way from shore in your tiny craft and feeling like, yeah, oh, I've got a long way to go. So yeah, it can be a bit scary sometimes out there.
Yeah. And you've got to be so careful, don't you?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
it's not the water sports. When I say I bought a fishing canoe, the reason is I'm not going to be even going like far. I'm probably just pootling around the shore near my house, actually. And again, it comes back to this deeper connection. I don't have any aims to go anywhere away from the shoreline because I know I've done a lot of paddleboarding, haven't done a lot of canoeing or kayaking, but I know water and I know how dangerous it is, and I tend to just wait for flat calm conditions because I just don't like paddling, you know, when you're paddling it's choppy and it's just it's just not very nice.
Absolutely.
I just wait for those days, and when you get that flat calm beautiful days, and the idea is just to put around the shore and I don't know, do some photography to combine it, but
it's just going back to that connection. It's another dimension to explore, isn't it? I mean it gives you a way of exploring, you know, physically a place that you couldn't, but also just, I mean, you know, I couldn't begin to express like how pleasant it is and how nice it is to feel, you know, that wooden paddle going down into the water.
Yeah, I know.
And sort of feel the weight of the water, you know, pushing back on you, and to kind of, you know, physically, intuitively comprehend it rather than just with your eyes. You know, there's more than one type of knowledge in this world. You know, this is the thing, and I think in our society we have come to idolize, you know, mental knowledge, shall we say, you know, cleverness and understanding and scientific understanding. And I mean, hey, I'm a science graduate, right? I get that, and I enjoy all that. But there's so many different types of ways to understand a place, and you know, that physical exploration I think is crucial. But yes, one doesn't want to go too far in it, especially with water sports. Because, you know, what I was going to say is that, you know, when I take, you know, I had this idea that canoeing with a dog would be a sort of blissful companionship. In Loch Maree, it's more like assassination attempt after assassination attempt. You know, he's just absolutely determined sometimes to flip the boat and think, I'm not having this. Oh. I'm not going out with you again. You know, you little wretch.
What sort of dog have you got?
Well, he's a Nova Scotian duck tolling retriever, which is a bit of a mouthful. The great dogs if you're into the outdoors, because they're very active and they're very smart, but they also have a sort of a shutdown point, unlike collies, you know, like collies keep on staring at the ball, you know, whereas tollers do, you know, they reach a point where it's like, okay, I've had enough now, I'm ready to go home, please, you know, and they're generally very, very sweet natured, although mine's a bit more of a handful, and it should be, anyone listening thinking of getting one should be warned that they are renowned for the so-called toller scream. When they get really excited, they will scream, you know, and it's like, oh my God, it's my favorite person, he's back, but mine also howls, you know, he howls out the window at the neighbor's kids and things like that. So yeah, he's a bit of a handful.
Sounds hard work.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a great companion, but yeah, he's hard work. So yes, be warned.
Well, I'll keep you posted on the whippet and the water, but yeah, the sky is really the one thing in life. She loves everything apart from water, so I kind of got the wrong dog, but but we love her, so we're going to give it a go. And she's got a little flotation device, and we shall see. But anyway, I think that was just such a wonderful chat with you. I was so glad to have met you. And
it's been such a pleasure. Yeah.
About this, it's really nice, isn't it? Funny how you can be in the same sort of vicinity of somebody for so long and never connect.
Yes, absolutely.
This podcast is great.
Several times for me. Yeah. No, I have a very great friend, a chap by the name of Hamish Napier, who some of your listeners might recognise the name, as a folk musician. And Hamish and I, we connected a few years ago because Hamish was writing an album about the woods in Straths Bay. You know, it was an album inspired by the Caledonian Forest. So we met because of that mutual passion. And once we met, it was like, why haven't we met before? You know, the wonderful thing about it was that, you know, earlier we were talking about about how you have to sort of follow your interest and not worry about what other people think. And you know, for me, it was like, well, I've got this fascination with pine trees. And Hamish just had that exact same thing. And it was it was so nice to just meet someone where you bond instantly over what is seemingly quite an obscure passion and not have to explain it or to justify it. It's just like, yeah, trees, man. They're just the business, aren't they? So
it's great.
But yeah, no, I felt that as well, just in the course of this. Just like it's so nice to speak to someone who, you know, again, you don't really need to explain that sense of meaningful connection and deep knowledge and so on. It's just, you know, yep, that's what it is. Let's do it. So that's terrific.
Wonderful. And I think everybody will appreciate this conversation. It's so thank you. Thank you very much for joining.
Oh, thank you.
We'll share your links on the show notes so people can go and find you. But thank you for joining me today.